The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Now, by common consent, we're not building enough houses and apartments to deal with the demand that we have for affordable housing. But at the same time, those houses and apartments that are being built are often being built in locations which are contributing to what's known as urban sprawl. We have a number of guests with us. We have Orla Hegarty, who is an architect and assistant professor at School of Architecture, Planning and Environmental Policy at UCD. We've Catherine Martin, deputy leader of the Green Party. Frank MacDonald, the author and former environment editor of the Irish Times. And Suzanne Mead, who is research fellow at the Transport Research Institute at the Edinburgh Napier Institute. I want to start with you, Orla Hegarty, because is that an accurate summation of what's going on at the moment, that we seem to be going back almost to the Celtic Tiger years, but a lot of the building that's going on is going to condemn the purchases of those houses and apartments to lengthy commutes?
We are. What we know we need is a more dense city, is that the suburbs have higher density of people and that the city centre has more apartments.
Now, let's make this just beyond Dublin as well, because I think the same applies to Cork and Galway and Limerick and Waterford and places, doesn't it?
It does, and I should have spoken about the other cities as well. But what we are seeing is more of the same, really. We're seeing low density housing, and that means three-bed semis in the main and some four-beds and five-bed detached houses on housing estates with gardens front and back, where people are generally car commuting. And again, it's happening on the edge of cities rather than closer to town. It makes it very unsustainable for providing services, for providing public transport for people, for bringing services out to them, water, drainage, broadband, and everything that goes with that. And it's more of the same in having to build roads to get to them.
But Catherine Martin of the Green Party, isn't that what people want? People want to live in 3, 4, 5 bedroom houses. They want the garden front and back, and they are prepared to put up with the inconvenience of the commute to get those facilities at what they regard as being an affordable price.
No, they're being forced out of their towns because they simply can't afford to buy there. And it's hard to believe we are still having this conversation and we're still going wrong on this. What we need is proper investment in public transport, and we need to bring development back to the core. We need to breathe life into our towns. And as you said, it's not just a Dublin problem. It's the towns right across Ireland that need to have life breathed back into them, because what we have at the minute is people commuting, which is not good for their quality of life. I think it must be unbearable to spend at least an average of 5 hours in peak traffic. The mental health impact there alone and being separated from your family. You have communities, well, there isn't a sense of community because you don't have time to get to know your neighbour. What we need is to breathe life back into our towns, support the local economy and support quality of life. But it's simply not happening.
Is this suggestion that these don't develop as communities necessarily fair or accurate? Don't you get the growth of all sorts of sports clubs and, you know, even if it isn't maybe during the week, at the weekends, parents and children get involved in GA clubs, football clubs, all scouting, all sorts of activities that people do actually adapt and make the most of their circumstances.
You actually find a lot of the time, so a lot of the people are commuting on, they're on the outskirts of the towns. They're maybe commuting to a city, they're on the outskirts of town. And the problem is we don't put in the infrastructure. We don't invest in communities. We don't even invest in schools. And you'll find where the urban sprawl is and where people are living, that's where the schools are jam-packed and they can't even get their children into schools, never mind sporting facilities or recreational facilities. No thought is put into it whatsoever. And that is having a detrimental impact on quality of life. Even if you look to Kildare, to Salins, to Maynooth, what we have there again, I really think commuters need to take to the ballot box and show their, because they are frustrated and they need to show that frustration. Commuters who want to go in a train in Salins or Maynooth, who want to park their car at the train station and then go into in this case, say the city centre, they can't because they didn't plan for enough parking. It's forcing more people on the roads. That's what we're dealing with right now, you know. It's ridiculous, but, you know, it all goes back to a 2-to-1 investment ratio of roads over public transport. It needs to reverse. It needs to be the other way around. And that's what the Citizens' Assembly backed. It wants to be the other way around. And then we have to look at cyclists and pedestrians. We need to look at our vulnerable users. That would bring a sense of community. Look at Barcelona. It's the model for pedestrian access all through the city. Think of that as a thriving...
Barcelona is a very big city as well. It extends for miles upon miles upon miles.
Look how good it looks. Look how good it works in the city centre, pedestrianised.
Yeah, but that's a different thing because there's still
transport.
People live an awful long way perhaps from their place of work.
They're not in cars because of a very good metro system.
Okay. And Frank MacDonald, you wrote a fascinating piece in the Irish Times at the weekend about commercial buildings being demolished. And that's actually something I want to talk to you about on another day. But it did strike me that in cities, perhaps are we too slow to actually take residential accommodation, perhaps demolish and rebuild, to have what are so-called brownfield sites to fill in, to actually have people living in central areas rather than constantly sending them out to Kildare or to Wicklow or in Cork. I'm always fascinated by how many of the people that I grew up with going to school in the North Mall in Cork who now live out beyond Blarney and Ballincollig and various other places.
Well, you know, with all due respects to the Cork, Limerick, Galway, Waterford, you know, the problem is at its most acute in Dublin because of the concentration of economic activity in the capital and the way in which Ireland has not developed in any kind of balanced way over the last God knows how long. I mean, talking about decades. And I think I remember the first time it struck me that Dublin was sprawling out in the way that it has back in the early 1990s when I was coming back from a planning conference, ironically enough, in Galway. And we drove through Rochford Bridge in County Westmeath, which was a village that was chiefly known for its lovely little Bordnamona housing estate. And there were these random housing estates tacked onto it that looked like bits of Dublin. And in fact, they were bits of Dublin because when we drove into one of them, there was nobody there. There weren't even cars parked outside the houses. There was literally no sign of life because everyone had taken to the road to get into work in Dublin, which was a distance of 80 kilometres away. And that is a problem that was allowed to develop during the Celtic Tiger boom years in the 1990s. The government turned a blind eye to it. Bertie Ahern didn't see the problem. They thought he thought people were voting with their feet. They were getting better value houses, as you said, in places like Portlaoise and Longford and Mullingar and so on, and Gorey in County Wexford and Drogheda and Dundalk and all the other places that Dublin has popped up in over the last 20 or 30 years. And so it was literally left to the market, you know, instead of...
And sorry, those created the housing estates which were demolished when NAMA had to be created. And now it seems that, if not quite as far out, we're heading out towards those areas to build again.
Well, I think that this is one of the most depressing things that I've witnessed in the last few years is that, you know, we have a lot of publicly owned land and a lot of vacant sites in the city centre, in the inner city area, in the inner suburbs. And that's where the first priority to build housing should be. But if you think of, for example, there is a price problem. I mean, obviously there is, because if you think of the sale of the RTE site or part of the RTE site out in Donnybrook, that was sold to Cairn Homes last year for over 100 million euro. Now, that's handy money for RTE, you know, it's a huge
capital gain. But does that mean that
gain.
Every unit's going to have to be 600,000 euro plus?
Well, this is exactly, probably even more than that, because the site cost alone per unit of housing that they expect to build on that site works out at over 200 grand. So before a single brick or block is laid on a single brick or block, there's this huge burden of the site cost to take into account, and then maybe another 400 grand to build, and then the profit of the builders. So, you know, like, nobody could suggest that any of that land is going to end up being used for affordable or social housing or any kind of housing that people, other than people who are cash rich, would be able to buy.
But hang on, that suggests as well the price of the land on RT, that we have a shortage of land in Dublin and in our other cities, because I just don't want to make this all about Dublin. And I know there's plenty of places in Cork city centre.
Yes, indeed,
that could be
like
built as well.
Virtually the whole Docklands area of Cork.
Magnificent,
you know,
untapped asset.
Marvellous asset. And, you know, it's hard to see how that is going to be developed.
But why is the land so expensive if you have so much land available? For example, even in Dublin, you have the Pool Beg site, which was one of the great disasters of the Celtic Tiger boom. And yet when prices collapsed, nobody took advantage of that to actually build housing.
Yeah, we're still waiting for anything to happen on that particular site. That was the glass bottle site that was sold for over 400 million during the height of the boom. before the market crashed in 2008. And, you know, we're living with those kind of legacies. And part of the reason why we're doing that is because we failed abysmally to do anything to implement the famous Kenny report that was done in the 1970s, in 1973, by a High Court judge, one of our leading constitutional lawyers, who said, look, if you need land for development, all that you need to do is to pay agricultural value plus 25% in designated areas.
Some of the comments coming in. Mark in Laois says, Port Laois is creaking at the seams. They've moved all the schools to one side of the town and zero public transport. Laois County Council is hiring staff to put down bollards due to the traffic issue. Also purchasing land to extend the car park at the train station for commuters. Hundreds of cars driving less than 2 miles to leave the county. Another one, Kieran on Twitter says, in 1911, there were over 120 people living on Market Street, Trim. There are currently two families on the street. Most other residents are one-bed apartments, 20-25 maximum dwellers repeated throughout Ireland. And Chris says, I worked 45 miles from home for 15 years and calculated that I was spending 480 hours minimum in my car every year. That's like working an extra 12 weeks a year. Orla Hegarty, Assistant Professor, School of Architecture in UCD. You were just mentioning off air that these estates, many miles from our major cities, aren't necessarily going to be suitable to people as they get older, unless they're driving. Why not?
Well, I think going back to the point Catherine made earlier about community, you know, communities build up on all those little daily social interactions of bumping into your neighbours or meeting at the school gate or at the shops. And the more you drive people into driving, they're stopping at garages on the way to work, they're picking up food, they're going to supermarkets, and all of that interaction with the community is gone. But it also means that the women, often if you don't have a second car, if you're at home, women and children don't feel safe often going outside in the evening after dark in the winter. Elderly people are very isolated. People who have reduced mobility or disability are isolated. So what you're really saying is a large section of the community for a large part of the year are very isolated in these communities. They don't feel that they can get out and they don't have anywhere to go.
A lot of people texting in saying that the issue is that there's not enough foreign direct investment been encouraged out of Dublin, that all the jobs are coming into Dublin. I think the IDA will dispute that and say that there's plenty going pro rata to Cork and Limerick and Galway and other places like that. But it is a major theme of the comments coming through. Another one says destruction of smaller Irish towns is happening because the future land needed for property development in towns like Port Laois has been used for low density sprawling housing estates. This also destroys life in the cities as people spend an increasing percentage of time in cars. Most of the proposed developments are mirror projects of what we did wrong in the past. Just because people want a front and back garden does not mean people should get them, even if their parents were lucky enough to have them. Wake up, people, we're doing this all to ourselves. Suzanne Mead joins us, a research fellow at the Transport Research Institute at the Edinburgh Napier Institute. These problems that we're discussing for Ireland, do they happen in Scotland? Do they happen in other countries around Europe?
They do. And I think one of the first things to say about sprawl is it's probably inevitable everywhere. And certainly that's the indication across Europe. And it's part of economic growth and population growth. But unlike Ireland, the pattern and the pace of sprawl and the transport outcomes, they vary greatly depending on a few things. So planning, the provision of services in advance and the level of governance. Looking at Ireland, back to 2006, the Environmental Protection Agency in Europe called Dublin out as one of the examples of what not to do and how to achieve sprawl. And if you look at what good sprawl should look like, if you do take the choice to take a longer commute, the offset to that, so the positive of that may be a different type, a larger home or more affordable home and maybe the country lifestyle that you would like to have. And that's offset against the negative, which is the long commute and the extra cost of that. And to touch on something Catherine said, at a local level, so the trade-off for that would be your commute in and out, the long commute that you do maybe 160 days of the year. But when you're living locally, when it isn't a work trip that you're doing, you're going to the shops, leisure, visiting friends, etc., you should have the choice there locally in your during the evening, etc., at the weekends, to make sustainable choices like to walk or cycle or take public transport. So for a lot of the towns and villages in Ireland, that's probably not realistic, and it is very car dependent. So if you're looking at Ireland then and all the indicators of bad sprawl, we'll call it. We're looking at Transport Infrastructure Ireland is all around Dublin, all the routes going into that, they're all coming up to capacity or past capacity. And that is puts a strain on investment we've already made in the transport infrastructure, road infrastructure. The commute times in Kildare, Wicklow and Meath are all getting longer in each of the national transport surveys that are done. The modal share contrast between Dublin and outside Dublin, cars in Dublin, the usage is going down between 2014 and 2016, but outside Dublin it's actually going up. So between 2014 and 2016 it went from 79 up to 81%. And car dependence is very high. So this type of development locks in car dependence, and also that affects our emissions because we've lots of people travelling by car and the distances are getting longer. Some of those impacts are increased congestion.
Okay. Well, I want to bring Frank back in because, Frank, the solution it would seem to me is to start building higher in Dublin and in our other cities. And yet there seems to be an enormous negativity about the idea of building to any height and scale. Mainly it's the residue of the likes of the Ballymun flats, and people feel that that was socially a disaster. But because it was, does that necessarily mean that large apartment blocks are the wrong way to go?
No, I mean, I think obviously we're not going to build another Ballymun. That was a disaster, it turned out to be, after all the high hopes that were raised about it at the beginning. And don't forget that the Seven Towers were named after the seven signatories of the 1916 proclamation. That was as proud as we were of it then. But that turned out, it all went bad over time.
And they're all gone.
And they're all gone now. They didn't even keep one of them as a memento of that great heroic period. But I think that, you know, there's a lot of confusion between the notion of high-rise buildings and urban density. And I think that, you know, there'd be general agreement among planners that, and architects as well, that, you know, buildings of 6 to 8 stories are sufficient to guarantee a good degree of urban density, and that you don't need to build towers. But on the other hand, what has happened is that Owen Murphy, the Minister for Housing, has basically given now with his new guidelines for building heights in urban areas, has given a carte blanche for towers of indeterminate heights, I mean 40, 50 stories even, to be built anywhere and everywhere in every town that has a population of over 5,000. Now that to me is just crazy, because all that's going to happen is, I mean, nobody's going to build high-rise apartment towers like that. All they're going to build is blocks of student housing and office blocks and hotels.
Orla Hegarty, your architectural colleague Dermot Bannon was telling me recently of visiting a development in Sweden where they actually managed to have anything from 1 bed up to 6 bed apartments in the block. The idea being, and these were also rental accommodation, that as people's family size got bigger, they were able to trade up to bigger apartments. As the children left, they were able to trade back down to the smaller apartments. We never have joined up thinking like that in Ireland, do we?
Well, he's right on that. And we do need communities and developments that have a good mix. And in fact, that has been what the law here was until standards were changed last year. And now we have new standards for build-to-rent apartments that allow all small units, which is completely contrary to all good thinking on this. And again, going back to Frank's point about height, it ties up with the issue of land values earlier on, because lifting the caps on heights across Dublin, that gave stability to the land market in Dublin, and it set the price on land. That has now been lifted again, which is again pushing development further out.
Catherine Martin, I think Sandyford's in your constituency, isn't it?
It is, yes.
It is, because a listener says, and also really about the commute, we're speaking of building high and lack thereof, there's a skeleton building that must be 10 or 12 stories high in Sandyford next to the Beacon Hospital Sandyford. And hotel. I'm sure anyone who knows the area is familiar with it. It's sitting there in the middle of long finished projects, unfinished for about 10 years. It is one of the greatest eyesores. Why can't there be a compulsion placed on the owners of that property, who I know bought it on the cheap during the downturn, to actually complete the development?
I know, and there should be, and it's a complete eyesore and in that entire area, and there should be a compulsion. It seemed like there should be a vacant levy on properties as well and on sites. There's a restriction at the minute of 500 square metres. There's so much there within our city that and towns that could be used there. You know, and in relation to the high rise, high density is the solution, not high rise. And I think Lurkin Sir coined the phrase high rise is for high rollers.
Yeah,
and
indeed.
We have a 22 apartment, 22 floor apartment building recently constructed in Dublin. And they actually use their Part 5 obligation for social housing to go to Rialto rather than there. And it's now renting for 3,500 to 4,500 for a two-bed unit. So that's certainly shutting out the local community. We need to look at building affordable housing on state land, like if it's in Dublin, in the Broadstone Garage, the Cahill Brua Barracks. So you get 3,000 homes there built with a community focus, with green spaces. We need to look at in our towns. I am originally from Monaghan. I need to look at the towns there. The heart has been ripped out of them. Even actually where I'm living now in Dundrum, the heart has been ripped out of the village Dundrum. Why aren't we looking at, and this is something that Orla would know a lot about, in converting residential over the shops? It's such a difficult process.
Can you imagine what you could do in Dublin city centre, Cork city centre, all those things? There are floors above shops that are vacant, which would be fantastic for people to live in.
We've talked about that until the cows came home, and nothing much has happened. And it's
fire regulations apparently is the issue all the time.
This is the big problem. That the fire brigade comes in and says, no, you can't do this, or you can only do it if you put in concrete floors or whatever. I do not accept that. I think that a lot of buildings in Irish towns are three or four stories high. You know, the upper floors are gradually been vacated over the years. Some of them are derelict. People have moved out into the countryside, and that is not going to be addressed by the government's great project, Ireland 2040 plan.
Graham in Tipperary says, I think we're missing a dose of reality here, and once again getting carried away with the big cities. The people commuting are doing so because they don't want to or can't afford to live in the busy cities. Surely the question here should be, how do we get industries out to the commuter towns, not just into the cities? I commute an average of 4 hours every day, but I don't want to live in the cities because of the cost of living. The listener says, stuck in Galway city traffic while you talk about traffic. But that point, we go back to Scotland and our other guest who's on the phone line, Suzanne Mead, that there are many people who actually just do not want to live in cities and believe they should be facilitated in living in towns around the country or even in their one-off bungalows or houses in the countryside.
If there is always going to be a proportion of people who want to do that, and that's fine. And as I said before, they can choose to have the trade-off of the long commute. However, if we continue to do the one-off bungalows and if we continue to build on the fringes of existing villages and urban developments, then we're going to have to live with the consequences of that. And some of them is reduced road safety, more and more one-off houses with accesses and junctions into estates that are just for residential use are going to impact our road safety overall. And also population health. I was just listening to some of the comments from some of the listeners, and the hours that they're describing that they're using to, or the hours that they're going through for their commute. I don't think people realise possibly the impact on their health that makes. There's a few studies, recent studies in the UK, and you know, anyone kind of commuting regularly each day, 70 to 90 minutes, isn't getting enough sleep. About half the population that do that. There's a third of an increase in your risk for depression, financial worries, partly because you're spending more money on the cost of travel, and also higher risk of obesity because you have no choice of active travel. So if you do want to live in these communities in that way, that's fine, but there is the trade-off.
But Suzanne, there's another thing here. This is a listener, Bernadette, said, the idea of moving to an apartment in theory is good, but the management fees can be outrageous. Plus you might have with buildings issues with huge costs. You might not have the money. There's a lot of people just in Ireland like the idea of living in a house. They might live in an apartment maybe when they're a student or when they don't have children, but Irish people seem to have taken against the idea of living in apartments with families. How are you going to change that?
Yeah, and that is something that's different in Ireland compared to a lot of other places in Europe. But the analogy of public transport, where if the offer is better than the alternative, then people will change. So if the offer of going in your car and going in a clean, new, integrated real-time transport, public transport is provided, then people will swap. If the alternative between a house and a garden that you own or something that you rent, and if you know no security of tenancy and you've small rooms, small windows, nowhere to put your bicycle or store all your belongings and things like that, people obviously are not going to choose that. But if you offer them something better and something that they can see themselves staying in, and I think Orla touched on that, bigger apartment size, so it can expand with your family size, or you can start in one apartment and change to a bigger apartment in the same block. I used to live in Galway, so I used to commute and live outside the city and commute into work. Now I live in Edinburgh. I live in an old tenement block, which is kind of, it's four stories high. A lot of them are 4 to 5 stories high, and it's fine. And that density then affords me the choice then. I don't need a car in Edinburgh. I get the bus, I walk, and public transport. So having come from Ireland and owned a house in Galway and did the transport and the commute and everything like that compared to what I do now, the quality of my life is much better on a personal level. And that is all down to my transport.
Thank you very much for being with us from Edinburgh, Suzanne Mead. I need to finish up. So I'm going to leave Frank MacDonald, because you're a veteran on this. You've been talking about... Well, you are. You've been talking about this stuff for 40 years. Much more length of period of time than our other guests combined.
Obviously with very little effect.
But that's what I was just about to come to. That we could have these discussions. I bet we could come back and have the same discussion next year, and the political system will not have
failed completely in relation to Project Ireland 2040, which is the government's national spatial strategy, which lays out the way in which the country should develop over the next 20 years or so. And, you know, initially the draft of that was very encouraging. I was very encouraged by it. It said that people would have to show economic reasons to live in the countryside. And that would mean essentially being associated with farming in some way or another. And when that came out, when the final version of the plan came out, that was changed to social or economic reasons. In other words, you can make any kind of an argument for living in the countryside now. And as a result of that, the whole thrust of the plan has been thrown askew. And that was all about consolidating cities, towns and villages. If we allow unrestricted development in the countryside, we cannot achieve the other aim.
Listener says, storage heating, main reason I wouldn't live in an apartment long term. Okay, Frank MacDonald.
Fair enough.
Orla Hegarty's nodding in agreement on that particular one. Thank you very much,
Orla. Nothing wrong with gas.
And Catherine Martin of the Green Party. Thank you all very much for being with us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.